Welcome to the Power Prize Podcast. My name is Mackenzie Bennett, and I'm your host. Thanks for listening to the show. On this podcast, we share information to empower your podcast. Today's guest is Kirk McElhern.
Hi, Mackenzie. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great.
Great. So today we're going to talk about your show, the next track. We've got some important iTunes, or I guess in that sense, Apple news. And then at the end of the show, we will be talking about how to prepare for your podcast. And then Angelo Mandato will be coming in at the end of the show as well after we've had our discussion with Kirk. So got a lot of stuff for you in this episode, and I'm excited to get started.
Let's get going.
All right. So this news coming from Apple, they had their Worldwide Developer Conference last week in early June. And at the end of the week, they focused on some information for podcasting. And they announced that they will be sharing statistics from their native iOS app called Podcast. Many people are very familiar with this. This is the one that I use to listen to all the podcasts. And now they're going to be sharing analytics with people that have podcasts. So a lot of people are really excited about this.
Well, it's the first time that Apple is offering this sort of analytics. Mm-hmm. I'm somewhat excited, but it's really not going to help my podcast that much. So we use Blueberry for hosting in the PowerPress plugin on a WordPress site, and we get stats about the podcast, which is global, and it covers all our downloads that are direct and the downloads from iTunes or Apple's Podcasts app. Mm-hmm. But we only get 12% of our listens through the Podcasts app on iOS. 18% are people using the iPhone media player, and that means they're listening in a browser, mm-hmm. Going to our website or another website. And then another 8% is the iPad media player. So for us, the actual podcast app is just a small chunk of our listening. Obviously, for the really big podcasts, the ones that make a lot of money, they'll want this statistical information. But someone mentioned the other day that roughly 70% of people listen to podcasts through Apple's apps versus 30% through other ways, third-party mm-hmm. apps or websites. And I guess this is the case for the occasional podcast listener. But our podcast, The Next Track, is the kind that attracts people who maybe listen to 10 or 20 other podcasts in the week. So we actually get most of our listens through Overcast, which is an iOS app. It's about a third of our listens. So while it'll be great to get some analytics from Apple, it's not going to help us very much.
That's a very good point that this is great overall, and it's nice to see Apple getting involved this way. However, it's not the end-all be-all for a lot of podcasters, and I feel like it's going to be that way for a lot of hobbyist podcasters such as yourself.
Yeah, and if everything had to go through iTunes, obviously that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's far from the case. And I would think that any podcast, large or small, they're definitely going to be a large percentage going through iTunes. But depending on the podcast, it's going to be, is it 70% or is it to 12% we have? Is it something in the middle? This isn't really going to help advertisers that much, I don't think. Now, it depends on what kind of analytics information. You know, it looks like they'll get information how many people are listening throughout a podcast. In other words, how many drop off at a certain point in the podcast. And that actually would be useful for anyone, because if you're running an hour podcast and you find that half of your listeners are giving up after 30 minutes, well, that should tell you that you should be running a 30-minute podcast.
Exactly. That's what I was about to bring up, is that that information will be more crucial than just the statistics in general, because this is going to give you a little more detailed information. A lot of the time, the stats don't, you know, they're not going to be able to tell you how long people listened, what parts they skipped over, if they even listened at all because it's being downloaded. They really aren't able to give you that information unless the app is working with the hosting company.
I'm assuming that Apple is not just getting the stats for podcasts that are streamed, but also for people who are listening in the podcasts app and who have opted in to sharing information with Apple.
Right.
In that case, Apple is still being able to record these analytics. And another stat that would be interesting is to know how many people have downloaded an episode and didn't listen to it.
There's quite a few of those in my app right now.
Well, I know that, you know, that there are a number of podcasts that I subscribe to, and There are some where I listen to every episode, and there are some others. I've got two podcasts by WNYC Radio, mm-hmm. the Leonard Wilpate Show and the Brian Lehrer Show. And these are news podcasts, and they're in segments from like 15 to 30 minutes. But on a given day, out of 2 hours of programming for each show, I'm only interested maybe in one topic.
Right.
So if I do download them all, I end up deleting three quarters of them. And it's not because I don't like the podcast. It's because the topics that they're covering don't interest me. Mm-hmm. In more general podcasts, yes, it's true that often I'll start listening and say, okay, this particular episode isn't for me. Or I'll look at the show notes and say, well, I don't really care about this. And downloads don't equal listens, and we know that. So it would be interesting to know how many downloads there are compared to how many listens and where the listeners drop off.
So this brings up something else that they are also implementing for the podcast app, is that they're now going to be reorganizing the way that you see shows that are set up as series and as seasons. So we can get into that a little more later with Angela about how that'll work. But that brings up something. I'm listening to a season of a show right now. And like, I'm binge listening to it. Like, I listened to one this morning when I was getting ready to go to work, and then on my drive to work, and I'll listen to it again to finish all of these episodes because there's 10 of them. I'll finish it in the next day or so. I think with seasons, that is one of the places that you will see people will listen to every episode in a row, as opposed to a normal show where, you know, you pick and choose what you want.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's just like a TV series. Mm-hmm. As you say, you can binge 10 episodes or 12 episodes, but it's a minority of podcasts that are in that form. Most podcasts are a never-ending weekly stream.
Right,
you know, we hope it's never-ending.
They said that one of the reasons why they're encouraged and excited about iTunes releasing this information is because a lot of the times companies cannot agree on what information to use. There's no standard necessarily, and it's just, you know, people are taking what they can from hosting companies such as Blueberry, but overall a lot of them haven't been able to choose something together. And they are more likely to use this data as a set, you know, of what to base things off of, especially because they like to know if someone was actually able to listen to your mid-roll or your pre-roll, or, you know, did people just immediately skip over it?
Yeah. Well, as has been quoted a gazillion times, I think it was David Ogilvy, the advertiser, who said, I know that 50% of my advertising budget is wasted, but I don't know which 50%.
Yes.
And maybe this sort of stats will help refine some of the information. You know, as you said, there's no standard, unlike Nielsen ratings for TV or mm-hmm. or the way radio shows are rated. And a lot of this has to do with the way people listen to podcasts. You can stream them directly. Mm-hmm. You can download them and listen to them time shifted. You can even listen to some live. You know, there are a number of tech podcasts that broadcast live. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the WNYC radio shows that I listen to, which are actually radio shows that are also made available as podcasts. So you have a wide variety of ways of listening to a podcast, and it is very hard to measure them.
Mm-hmm. They're also doing an overhaul for how the app will look. So they've taken out a tab, I believe, kind of merged a tab or two together. And then how you see seasons is going to look different. And I think they kind of meddled with a little bit of other stuff too. And the doc that I have been looking at that has all this information is going to be in the show notes as well. But I don't know if I'm actually going to like the new app. I don't particularly like the one that they have now, but it works. That's all I really care about. So.
Yeah, I don't use Apple's podcast app. As I use Overcast, which I find is really practical for a number of reasons. One of which is it has this wonderful feature that speeds up voices without making them sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Yeah. So I can listen to a 30-minute podcast in, say, 24 minutes.
Right.
And that's actually quite a big saving. As far as the Apple redesign, what they're doing is they're applying the design that they used in their music app, and in particular for Apple Music. And they're applying that in a number of places in iOS 11. In the App Store, it's going to inherit the same design. I should say that when I'm not podcasting, my day job is writing about Apple products and software. So I'm pretty familiar with all of this. They are standardizing the design of all these what would you call them? All these pull apps, the kind of apps where you're getting content that varies into the apps.
That'd be a good way to describe it.
You like it or you don't. You know, one thing that they've done is they've made the main words, the header words bigger and easier to see.
Okay.
And I think that's fine. Other than that, you know, with the exception of like the fast voice, the voice speed feature that Overcast has, that some other apps have as well, mm-hmm. a podcast app is a podcast app. I mean, right. I've tried lots of them and I don't really find that any of them do much different. I'm not the kind of person who browses a podcast app to find new podcasts. I discover them because my friends tell me about them or I read about them on Twitter and Facebook.
That happens
so
a lot.
So I rarely go to the iTunes store to look at podcasts or their podcast app to find a new podcast.
Mm-hmm. I know. A lot of the time I will search for them in there, but it's after someone has told me or I've heard about it before, most likely.
Yeah.
That's about it.
But as you say, it's good that they're finally doing something because they've ignored podcasts for years. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about it, Apple launched podcasts, if not for the iTunes store managing podcasts back in, 2004, mm-hmm. Podcasts probably wouldn't have taken off or they would have taken off in a very different way.
Right.
So we owe that to Apple, but it's been years since they've done anything.
I think they've been waiting until it got popular enough that people cared about the money.
Well, so this is what's different. We've had a number of very popular podcasts. You think of Serial or Marc Maron's podcast. And podcasts have broken out of that sort of nerd zone into the general public.
Definitely.
And it took a long time. It took 10 years for this to happen. But I guess we have reached the tipping point that means that basically the big companies have gone to Apple and said, hey, we want you to do something. And Apple's responding.
Mm-hmm. It's beforehand, it was content mainly by hobbyists with, you know, some well-known people splattering in throughout the years. And until it became mainstream to the fact of all different types of people listening to them and having all different types of content, that there was no reason for them to really get involved in such a way because they are a company and they are a ginormous company. And if they're not going to make money off of this, they're not going to get involved.
Well, interestingly, for all these years, they have been providing an interface to manage podcasts mm-hmm. for free for a long time, and they haven't made any money off of it, with the only possibility that someone bought an iPhone because they thought it would be better to listen to podcasts. I doubt that would be a big sales argument there. But they have been doing this for free, and in a way, it's been a public service. Again, they've helped podcasts grow. And now that they've grown, it's time for Apple to jump in. And what I'm wondering is, will they be making money off of this somehow? In other words, is it more than just Apple providing information? Are they going to charge the big podcast to get this analytics information?
I have no idea. That was kind of one of my worries a little bit, because I knew they were going to do something. Wasn't necessarily expecting them to release stats, but the person that's been dealing with iTunes for 10 years expects money to get involved at some point.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see in the fall when iOS 11 comes out.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, it said that they don't have a date released for this yet, but a lot of the specs and a lot of the ways that people will be able to use the new tags that they have, the documentation has been released for that, I believe, but it's still in beta. So, you know, it's happening. It's just now we have to figure out what are going to be the quirks and the downsides and the benefits and everything of how it's going to work now. So that'll be fun to figure out. They wrapped up some of their documentation, like their presentation, with how to create a podcast, which kind of encompasses the majority of what they were talking about for their entire session, but was the first time that I really saw them encouraging people to make a podcast. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah, which again leads one to think that maybe somehow they're going to be monetizing this. I wouldn't want Apple to start charging me to have my podcast listed in the iTunes store.
That's not going to go over
I don't think
well.
They're going to do that, but I'm wondering if they're going to, maybe they're going to start selling ads. You know, they only recently started selling ads in the App Store. Maybe they'll start selling ads in the podcast section of the iTunes store as well.
Wait, they started selling ads in the iTunes store?
In the App Store. So if you're an app developer, you can buy ads for certain keywords. So if you go to search in the App Store now, you'll see at the top of your search, if you're looking for a popular keyword, you'll see, I don't know if it says sponsored or ad or whatever, but you'll see search results that come up at the top of the list, which are paid search results.
Wow. I did not know that. It shows you how much time I spend in the iTunes Store.
I told you, this is my day job, so that's I have to keep up with this. But it's very possible that they're going to try and do the same thing with podcasts and say, okay, we've got all these stats now and we can help you get a bigger audience and this is what it's going to cost you.
Yeah, we shall see. That's what we got going on with Apple. And after our conversation, Angela will be on to discuss some more, you know, the tags that we're going to have in PowerPress for this new update to Apple. So stick around for that if you are interested in learning about that. All right, let's move on from Apple and get started talking on your show. So we have a little bit of your background working with Mac, but your show is called The Next Track, and you co-host it with someone. So tell us a little bit about that.
The Next Track, it's a podcast about how people listen today. Sorry, it's a podcast about how people listen to music today. Mm-hmm. I co-host it with Doug Adams, who, like me, is a longtime music fan. He works on the Mac side as well, developing apps, but he has a long experience in radio. So he does all the production, he does all the editing, and he does a great job editing. Unlike the kind of podcast where people just ramble and then release a recording, Doug spends a lot of time cutting out all the fluff and making it sound more like a radio show than a podcast that someone recorded in the basement. So we talk about music, and we talk about the music we listen to, but we also talk about the tools we use to listen to music. We both work a lot with iTunes, and iTunes is one topic of the show, but we talk about other music software, and we talk about audio equipment, home audio equipment. We've spoken to a number of critics and writers and musicians, and just to mention a few recent episodes, we had an author and Dylanologist named Andrew Muir, who talked about Bob Dylan's never-ending tour. Andy wrote a book about Dylan. We had the New Yorker's classical music critic Alex Ross last year, who talked about classical music and how listening to classical music has changed. A couple months ago, we had a musician named Dave Harrington of Dark Side and the Dave Harrington Group. Wonderful Brooklyn musician who plays some really interesting music sort of between genres. And we've talked to people about technical topics. Our next episode that's released on Friday is going to be about the various types of optical discs that you can listen to, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, SACDs, etc. So we try to cover music listening from all the different ends, you know, what we hear, how we hear it, who makes it, the history of music. We've had we had Elijah Wald, who talked about his book about the great bluesman, Robert Johnson, and a number of other authors. So we're interested in music, and we try to get music from every angle we can.
How did you decide to go this route? Because you're interested in music, but how did you decide to talk about how people listen to it?
Well, Doug and I have known each other for probably about 10 years, and we've worked together on a couple of projects, and a little more than a year ago. So we've just finished episode 56. It's been a year and a month, and a little over a year ago, we were chatting one day on Skype. Doug's in Boston and I'm in the UK, so we're quite far apart. We were chatting on Skype and we said, you know, we need to do something together, some kind of project. And we talked about writing a book together, because I've written a couple dozen tech books, but Doug isn't really interested in that. And then one of us said, well, what about a podcast? And we talked about what we'd be interested in talking about, the kind of conversations we like to have together about music. And we decided that that could make a good podcast. And we were very careful not to pigeonhole it into something as limited as iTunes, because again, we're pretty well known, each of us in our own way, in the iTunes area for what I write and for the apps that he develops. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want it to be a podcast about iTunes. But we both have very broad musical tastes. And we just kind of figured music fans get together and talk about music. They don't just talk about the music they listen to. They talk about the way they listen to it. They talk about a documentary, a film, a book about music. They talk about, new speakers and headphones. So we figured all of those things would be fair game. And I think over the year, the tone of the podcast has developed itself as we've had different guests and as we've had different topics. And it just sort of grows organically in the sense that we now know more or less where we want to go for, say, the next year or two.
Oh, wow. So that was going to be one of my questions. What has changed in the past year? Because you said it's been, you know, about that amount of time, and it never ends up being what you thought it would be in the beginning.
No, we certainly didn't set out to make money, but we've had several paying sponsors so far.
Oh, wow.
Our audience is on a pretty straight growth curve. I mentioned to you just before the show, thanks to the PowerPress plugin and Blueberry hosting, I can check my stats and I can see how many downloads we get on a given day. And I saw that we had a bump this weekend. We release our episodes on Fridays, and Friday's the biggest day, and then it goes down. But then it went back up this week on Monday and Tuesday, and I Googled and I found that we got mentioned in an article on The Guardian about the best radio this week. And that's kind of reassuring to know that we're getting some more mainstream attention. Mm-hmm. As our audience grows, it's spreading out. A lot of that has to do with the fact that we've had a number of fairly well-known critics and writers. We had David Sacks, whose book, The Revenge of Analog, was one of the New York Times best books of the year last year. So we're constantly trying to get people who have something to say about music to come on the show.
Right, right. That makes sense. So I see that you have quite a bit, or at least, you know, from what I looked at a couple episodes. It looks like you have quite a bit of feedback coming in from people on your website, like on your show notes page.
Yeah, so we have a website just to host the podcast, and we do get a fair amount of feedback. We get a lot more feedback by email through our contact form.
Oh, good.
But we do get people who comment on the website itself, on the show pages. We do provide detailed show notes, and anyone who's doing a podcast should do this. We have links to everything we talk about, and I think that's really important. And I should add that we have a segment at the end of the show that we call our next tracks, because the idea of the title of the show was, when you're in radio or when you're listening to music, you're thinking, what's the next track going to be?
True.
So at the end of every episode, we each take a couple minutes to talk about what we're going to be listening to, what our next tracks are. And we found that a lot of people really like that. We've gotten a lot of feedback that people have used this to discover music that they don't know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's really positive that we do get a lot of feedback. And we did a survey about 2 months ago, and we got enough responses for it to be quite valid. And I think two-thirds of our listeners listen to almost every episode, which means that we draw someone in and they find that this is a range of topics that they like.
Like you're able to keep them.
We want to keep them, and we want to get more. And we want to be as varied as possible without going too far out of the sort of strict music realm. But mm-hmm. we're not going to be afraid to extend our range a little bit more as time goes on. You know, think of the topics on a show as a sort of a Venn diagram, right? And you've got, in our case, music and music history and audio equipment and software. We've got these four things, but we could add another couple of circles to the Venn diagram to extend things a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And if we keep getting positive feedback, you know, we'll certainly do that.
Yeah. It's always critical to analyze what you're doing and then decide how to move forward with it.
So. I think anyone who does record a podcast should do a survey to find out what listeners like. It's actually quite useful because we had some open questions at the end, you know, any comments, what do you like, what don't you like? And we got a number of topic ideas that are in our list, but it's interesting to hear the comments of some of the people, what they really like and what they don't. And this helps you to understand what your listeners are expecting and what they're getting out of your podcast. If you only depend on your reviews on iTunes or direct feedback, then it might be a little skewed what you're thinking your audience reaction is.
You know, we have an audience survey available to anyone that is hosting with us in the podcaster dashboard that we have that we encourage podcasters to share with their audience. But then on the other hand, we also encourage people to do what you did and to use the Google form or SurveyMonkey or whatever it is that you want to create a survey that is specific to your show, that can ask about topics, that can ask about this specific episode or something like that, something that you know that your audience will be able to relate to, as opposed to just kind of the standard questions that are good and useful for every type of show. that we included in the survey.
So. Yeah, you need to tailor your questions to your specific topic area.
You definitely do.
And another thing I'd like to point out is that we decided early on that we were going to make this a 30-minute podcast. Mm-hmm. We've gone to 35. I think we even went to 42 once. But for the most part, it's 28 to 33 minutes. And I think this is really important because if you're like most podcast listeners, you've got a big queue in your podcast app. Yeah. And those hour-long or two-hour-long podcasts are the ones that people are going to get to last when they really have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, you know, even for us hosting a podcast, 30 minutes is it's a good time. It's a good duration. We can get into a topic without going too deep, without trying to without going into too much detail.
Right.
And again, Doug edits with a hatchet.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
So if we go over by 10 minutes, he'll cut 10 minutes out and he'll do it in a way that you won't notice. It'll sound just like it was a 30-minute episode.
That was going to be my next point is if you let the conversation go while you're recording, you're able to get in everything that feels right in the moment. And then when you edit, you're able to make it into a concise conversation that is, you know, necessary or appropriate for your show, for what you want to put out to the audience. But sometimes you have to have that longer conversation to get all of that in. So
yes, definitely.
It's very different, but, like, you know, of what you're going to record and what you're necessarily going to put out.
But I think too many podcasts don't get edited enough.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. But again, editing is a skill. And Doug has this skill because he's worked in radio. Mm-hmm. Personally, I wouldn't be able to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, he does that. And I do the promotion, the publishing, the marketing, the contacts with guests and all that.
Right.
But he's got this skill, which is extremely valuable.
I think, you know, I did a little bit of editing in school and in radio, but it was not a whole lot of editing. And now I'm becoming more comfortable with it, and it's also figuring out what should I ask while we are recording. It's a little bit of improving not only your editing skills, but your conversational or your interviewing skills at the same time.
Yeah, so I'm going to share a trick with you. Doug, when he's editing, if he's going to cut something out of what someone's saying and there's not a good transition, he'll record while he's editing a drop-in. He'll throw in a question that he'll record that wasn't in the podcast recording. So this is another way that we can make things sound smooth, that he can cut off someone who's a guest who's rambling and throw in a question that we didn't even ask, but he'll make the question fit to what the person is about to say, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I've thought about that before. I considered doing that for someone because I appreciated what we were talking about. And I considered doing that to, you know, create the question. But then in the end, I just decided this isn't actually relevant to the audience. I just enjoyed talking about it. So I decided to cut it. So there are a lot of decisions like that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do. Another thing we tell our guests is that we will be editing the conversation. Mm-hmm. So if they start saying something and they don't like what they're saying or they feel they've said it wrong, we tell them to just stop, be silent for a couple of seconds and start over.
Right. Gather
and
your
again,
thoughts.
Again, he can just cut it out and make them sound smart. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. You know, I was talking to on the last episode with Jimmy McKay, and he used to work in radio. And when we were just chatting after the show, he said sometimes if he can tell someone is a little nervous about being on the show or recording or something, that he'll ask them something that he knows he's not going to keep in the episode, just to kind of get the conversation starting, to get them a little more comfortable, to get all of the jitters out a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he doesn't have to worry about it, but it makes them sound better.
I found that when you're interviewing someone, once you get into the topic that they're passionate about, it can pretty much go on its own.
Oh, definitely.
So instead of saying, for instance, Mackenzie, where do you live? And you're going to tell me where you live.
Right.
Would say something like, so, Mackenzie, don't you live in Columbus, Ohio? Mm-hmm. And it'll just be this smooth way of going into a topic. Didn't your mother buy your first guitar when you were 10 years old? And this way of conducting an interview makes it's kind of like everything's just going downhill and it's smooth and the guests can respond more easily and more fluently than just asking them, when did you get your first guitar? And I find that an interesting technique. Listening to professional radio people interview can be very enlightening and can help a podcaster learn how to interview guests.
I think you're right. You know, that process that you were just saying, that it smooths it out. It's so much more enjoyable for the people having the interview or the conversation, as well as the people listening. I think it breeds a better response a lot of the time than question, answer. That's not fun for anyone, really.
You want your interviews to sound like a conversation in a pub over beers.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the best way to do it is to find the way to stroke the guest in a way.
Yes.
You know, as a metaphor.
Yes.
To make them happy, to make them understand that you're interested. And frankly, you have to really be interested. If you're not interested, don't invite the guests. Everyone we've invited, either musicians or critics or writers, these are people who've been talking about subjects we're interested in or whose music we like. It's not the same if you just pick someone because you think they'll be a draw for your podcast, but you don't know much about them and you're trying to find out about them. If we get an author, we both read the book and I make copious notes about what I'm going to ask the person in advance. You know, this isn't an improvisation.
Right.
When you do improvise, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it stands out a lot more. And, you know, on the opposite end of that, I've had one or two people ask to be on the Power Press podcast before, and after taking a look at their show and their website, I've just told them, I'm sorry, but you're not who I'm looking for, because I don't think that, you know, they're not what I'm looking for, in the sense of, I don't think it would be beneficial for people to learn about, you know, what you've been doing, and doesn't necessarily feel good to tell them no, to be like, I don't want you to be on the show, but I'm not about to just have them be on because they asked. Can't do that either.
It's very important because when you're hosting a podcast, you're the one who's shaping the content of the podcast. Mm-hmm. You have to pick the people, not just because you need a guest, but because they're going to fit the narrative that you have in your podcast from episode to episode, and they're going to cover the topics that you cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's very useful to see who's written a book about your topic. We found that it's an extraordinary way to get some very, very interesting people. If someone, I don't know, I'm interested in photography. So if you're doing a photography podcast and there's someone who's got a new book out, get in touch with them. Say, hey, we do this podcast. Would you like to talk? And they'll probably be more than happy to spend a half hour or 45 minutes talking about their book.
Mm-hmm. You're very
right. But do your homework, read the book, make notes, and know what you're going to ask.
You know, this is really leading into the next topic. I don't want to stop talking about your show, but it is leading into our next topic, which is how to prepare for your show.
Yeah.
So I initially sent you a link to an article about titled 6 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Own Podcast. And then you sent me a link that you had written something very similar to this almost 8 years ago or something like
2006.
That.
2006.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago. And they're similar and they have a lot of the same ideas. And I think if anything, that shows just how incredibly important all of these points are for when you're starting your show.
Yeah. I think it's too easy to think that a podcast can just be two people talking, mm-hmm. because there are actually some successful podcasts that are just two people talking.
Yeah.
And there are certain people who can pull that off, but most people can't. I won't go through the my eight rules of effective podcasting, but I think one of the most important ones is to really have something to say. And if you're just going to ramble, make sure you've got a good editor, so they can cut out all the stuff that you don't really want to say. Also, you've got to be unique. If you don't have what's called a unique selling point, a USP, people aren't going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. They're going to find someone else who's doing a podcast on the same thing. On our podcast, The Next Track, we are unique because there are no other podcasts that really cover music from the listening point of view, from the technical point of view, and the software. So we are in a niche, but it is relatively unique. If you're just going to do another Me Too podcast, you know, talking about what's new in sports or something, you'd better have a really good persona to pull this off. It's not that easy.
Because there's going to be 10 other shows that do the exact same thing as you.
10, 100. Mm-hmm. They're going to be, you know, it's extraordinary. And in any area, there are going to be some shows that really stand out. You know, I record a lot of tech podcasts. There are some tech podcast networks and that have shows that stand out, but there's plenty of room for other niches. But there's not really that much room for another podcast about the iPhone or about the Kindle. I don't think you could talk much about the Kindle for a half hour every week. There's a limited space for podcasts about watches and craft beers because this is being done. If you can get in early on a fad, then that's great. If the next fad is, I don't know, craft lemonade, and you can have the first podcast about craft lemonade, then go for it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you've really got to find a niche. You've got to find a way to differentiate yourself.
One of the ways that they were telling you to launch, you know, create and launch is get prepared and do your research and find out why someone should, you know, designate why someone should listen to you instead of everyone else.
Yeah.
You really have to do that.
Yeah. No, you have to know what the point of your podcast is. And it's also about being prepared again for each episode. As I said earlier, you know, we read the books, we take notes, we know what we're going to talk about. This said, you always have to be prepared for things to go in a direction you didn't plan, because that's just what interviews are.
Exactly.
And interviewing is something you can learn to do. Listen, as I said earlier, listen to the great interviewers. You know, Leonard Lopate is a wonderful example because he covers a lot of topics from politics to science to, you know, actors and authors come on his show. Listen to the way professional radio interviewers work. Use that as a template for the way you're going to interview your guests, whether the guest is your roommate or, you know, a Nobel Prize winning doctor or something.
Yeah, and it's important to be in the moment because you have to expect it to go wrong a little bit. You have to stay on your toes to react to however they are. You know, sometimes you get a guest and you're really excited about it, and then they come on and you're not working well together. This is not what you wanted. And you're trying to, in a sense, depending on how bad it is, salvage this to make it into something good.
So here's another tip. Don't be afraid to toss an episode.
Yes.
If it doesn't work out. We've only done this once on the Next Track. And what we're actually doing these days is we're a week ahead. So last week we recorded the episode that's going to be released at the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we're sort of out of schedule because at the end of the week we're recording an episode. We usually record on Mondays. So we've got a guest coming on Friday that we're recording. But we try to have an episode in the can a week ahead. And this way, if a guest drops out or if the episode just doesn't work, you've got another episode that's ready. Now, sometimes you can't do this because it's timely, because someone's releasing something or it's a newsy episode. But if you've got a guest and it's specific to a book, a record, a play, a movie, anything like that, don't be afraid to record it and not release it immediately. Keep it in the can in case you need to fill in for something else. Mm-hmm. It's always good to have something to fall back on. If a guest doesn't show up, if an episode doesn't work out, you may find that your recording got screwed up.
Yep. I have had an instance where a recording was just completely mangled and terrible and we couldn't use it. And then I had another time where, one, the recording was not going well. And then two, the parts of the interview that were actually recorded was not quality content because we were both so frustrated with the issue that was happening technically. We couldn't hear each other. We didn't really necessarily agree on the topic. We were both annoyed with the entire situation. And, you know, it was just, in the end, it was better to just scrap the whole thing.
And it's all Skype's fault.
It partially was.
Skype is the bane of podcasters.
That was a huge issue that day.
When it works, it's great, but we're well familiar that it often doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, those times when it is not working, it just sometimes will get on your last nerve.
So. Yeah, the technical parts of a podcast can be a bit frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Recording and getting the sound right. Personally, I'm not a gearhead in the sense that I have to have the best microphone. I've got a good microphone. I think it sounds okay. I don't think it makes that much of a difference to have a $500 microphone instead of a $150 microphone. Mm-hmm. I don't record through a sound mixer. And, you know, I don't think that's as important as the content. I mean, you need a decent microphone, but you don't need to get obsessed by all the gear. I think a good podcast is more about, as you said, preparing, but also how you manage an interview, how you edit. It's the content that really matters most.
It is 100% the content that matters most. There is a line that people will hit that if your recording is done so poorly that they will stop listening to the content that they like. And that is when, that is definitely when you need to address what you are doing.
Some episodes you're going to be really proud of and others you're going to say, well, it's interesting, but it's not great.
Right.
And this is just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, this is one of the good things about podcasting, that it is more spontaneous. It's unfortunate that people who listen to the pro podcast think that they should all sound like this. And we can't judge everyone on the basis of the way Marc Maron's show sounds or the way Serial sounds or the way, you know, Stereolab and those things sound, because those are radio shows just distributed as podcasts. They're not podcasts. And this, I think, is a good distinction to make. But most listeners won't make that distinction. They'll just... podcast for them means it's coming through their mobile device and it's not on the FM dial.
Exactly. They, you know, this is the way that they are able to find it. So it is a podcast for them.
Right.
That's a very good point to make.
It's the distribution that makes a podcast mm-hmm. these days.
You have been doing this show for a year now. And when you were getting started and putting everything together and figuring out how to start your podcast, what research did you do in that sense? Like, how did you come across Blueberry and PowerPress, and what decisions did you feel like you had to make there?
Well, I asked around. I know a number of people. As I said, I'm a journalist, so I know a number of people who do podcasts. Mm-hmm. We opted to host our own website because I already host my own website and Doug hosts his, and it was easier for us to just make a WordPress website. And we compared the several alternatives and realized that Blueberry fit what we needed. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. We're not doing daily podcasts. We're just doing one a week. And so we don't have huge hosting needs in terms of file size or anything. We're doing audio and not video. And it was just an easy fit. It was really simple to set up. The stats are really useful, as I mentioned earlier, not only the day-to-day stats, but, you know, the fact that I can look at my stats right now and say we get 33% of people use Overcast and 12% use the podcast app. And I know what country they're coming from. And I know that 74.9% of people are listening on mobile applications, which is really important when you think about it. That most of our list, 3/4 of our listeners are listening on an iPhone or an iPad or another type of, you know, mobile device. And I think that's important in knowing the way your podcast should sound. It should sound good enough that on a mobile device with earbuds, it will be easy for people to understand. So all the information that we get from the Blueberry stats is great. The PowerPress plugin means that I just have to drag an audio file onto a web browser page to upload it. And that's like brain dead simple.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of stuff makes my life easy. I mean, I've been blogging since 2004, I think. I've had a personal website since 1995, but I moved to an actual blog with a content management system in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing this for a long time. To me, one of the main points is how much time will I save? How much hassle will I not have? Because, you know, I've got so many other things to do between my writing and my website and, you know, other podcasts that I go on and all that, that what I wanted was the smoothest, simplest option. And you win. It's worked out fine. It's been a year and a month, and we're very happy.
Congrats on the year and a month.
Yeah.
And you know, we're always thinking about how we can make changes to PowerPress. And I'm curious, and I'm starting to ask people, do you look at your stats most often in your website or in the Blueberry dashboard when you log into your account?
I use the Blueberry dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
I keep a tab open in my browser all the time.
So
I check at least once a day.
So are you looking in the Blueberry dashboard because you check every day and you're not on the website every day, or for a different reason?
Because I can see the daily downloads and I can see the daily numbers for episodes.
Gotcha.
And I'm stat obsessive. I want to know. as I said earlier, we got, you know, a bump this week and I wanted to know why. Mm-hmm. And it's very useful because if someone is talking about you, you want to know why they're talking about you. And you want to know if it's generally it's good. Otherwise, people wouldn't listen to the podcast. And this is going to help shape what you're doing. And if someone's put a link to your show on their website, or if someone's tweeted or posted on Facebook, you want to thank them as well.
Also, yes, also
so
that.
So it's really important to keep up to date on this. So yeah, I check at least once a day to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And in particular, we release on Fridays, Friday morning, my time.
Are there any other plugins that you use on a regular basis to work with your publishing workflow?
No. In fact, the website for the podcast is relatively simple. I've only got a couple of plugins. I've got PowerPress. I've got Akismet to filter spam. And I've got Jetpack, and I use VaultPress, which is the WordPress automatic backup tool. Oh. And that's it. That's all I use. It's a very, very light WordPress blog. The goal of the podcast site is simply to present the information in the show notes, let people listen to it using the PowerPress plugin so they can listen on a web page, have links that they can outbound links from the show notes, but that's all it is. But the design is very, very carefully thought out.
That's also an important word to use for people is functional, because a lot of the time they get excited and they add things and then it slows it down, things conflict, it becomes a mess and not enjoyable for the user whatsoever. I don't want to go on a website that is bogged down by plugins and apps and widgets and these fancy things loading the entire time. I just want the information.
Yep.
You guys have a lot of different factors going into this. And, you know, I skipped around on a lot of different episodes to kind of get an idea of how all of this is done. And I do have to say that I think your editing is done very well. That was obvious when I started listening.
Doug is an extraordinary editor. You know, for Doug and I, it's partly a hobby. It's partly professional exposure, because mm-hmm. the more people who listen to the podcast, the more people come to our websites. They buy his apps, they buy my books, and it's making money. We've got sponsors who've sponsored a number of episodes, and you know, we do have a goal of making some money, and we have turned a profit after our expenses, not a lot for the amount of time we've spent so far, but that doesn't matter because we are building something with a long-term plan of hopefully getting it to be big enough to have sponsors every week.
Right. Right. It's a team effort in that sense of what you're going to get out of it. So, all right. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about your show or anything?
No, except it's like the best show on music out there if you're interested in what we're covering. And, you know, it is a somewhat limited audience, but there are a lot of people who, you know, I often mention a period of my life. You know the movie High Fidelity?
I'm very familiar with that movie.
Well, that was a period of my life, hanging out in a record store like that. Mm-hmm. Doug was working in radio. I was hanging out in a record store. We were making mixtapes and sharing our favorite music. And this is kind of what we do on this podcast. That's the way we want to make it. Like, you know, we've lost record stores, but we want to make this podcast the kind of thing where we're sharing what we love about music and how we listen to it. So if that's what you like about music, tune in. You might enjoy the show.
All right. Well, thanks for being on today. And everyone stick around for the segment with Angelo about PowerPress and Apple's new tags. Everyone, thanks for listening. And Kirk, thank you again for being on.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
Angelo, thanks for joining me for this segment of the PowerPress podcast.
No problem.
With my guest, Kirk, we already discussed that Apple is releasing statistics, but we didn't get into the meat of the technical side of it. So I've brought you on to give us an overview of that and how we're going to have it be involved in PowerPress.
Yes. So Apple has created about 5 new tags that go in RSS feeds. And I guess we should start with what the new tag is for the program level. Mm-hmm. So there's only one new tag at the program level, and it lets you define the type of the show. It used to always be that podcasts were episodic.
Okay.
And with this new attribute, you can now define your show as being a serial type podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know if serial is the right label for it, but because of the popularity of the podcast and it being a serial show, that it's become the default name for it. But really what we're talking about is content that's story-based or educational-based that has to be in the order that it was created, mm-hmm. Consumed in the order that was created.
Right.
So this opens a lot of doors, I think, for a lot of podcasters that want to create story-based or educational-based content. So you can basically create a book, mm-hmm. and we'll expand a little bit on how you'd handle, you know, different years or chapters. Or you could create an educational podcast, mm-hmm. and you have to start at episode one.
Right.
And let's step back a minute, too, and explain that these are new tags for the iOS 11 version that's coming out this fall. So if you're looking for this stuff now, you're not going to find it.
No.
So Apple wants us to have a jump on it so podcasters can start creating their content today to be ready for October, November release.
So these new RSS tags, they're only with Apple, but since pretty much everyone submits their shows to Apple and a lot of apps will use their directory, does that mean that if someone does their show with Seasons now, that it will show correctly, or is it just going to look the same that it does now?
Right. So with Seasons, there's going to be additional attributes on the per episode basis that you need to set, mm-hmm. in order to make that behavior correct when you view it. Mm-hmm. But yes, it'll display differently based on what content you're supposed to be looking at first, not necessarily what was the latest piece of content that was created.
Okay, so this isn't just being implemented into the new iOS 11 app. This is just happening in general.
Right.
Okay.
In the podcast app.
Okay.
But what they haven't made clear, though, is if they're going to let the podcast app work on iOS 10, mm-hmm. with these new features. So knowing Apple, they're probably going to say, if you want the latest version of the podcast app, you have to have the latest version of iOS.
That makes sense. I didn't even think of that before.
Yeah. And it's common for this because they've added some fundamental things under the under the onion. Mm-hmm. I don't know the right saying, but it's, you know, under the dashboard or under the hood,
yeah.
that iOS 10 is providing for everything to work in the GUI. So I completely understand if they say you have to have an iOS 11 device in order to get these features.
Yeah, I would just expect that at this point.
But knowing Apple, they're going to be pushing really hard for everybody to go iOS 10, or 11, I should say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have an iPhone and iOS 11 comes out and it's only been a couple days and you haven't heard any real issues with the rollout, I would make the update right away myself.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are these four other tags as well as this first?
Right. So we have it here on the screen, although what we'll do is in the show notes, we'll put a link to this PDF, mm-hmm. for the dev people like myself. I think the average podcaster is going to look at this and scratch their head, but that's okay. This is for developers.
I mean, I did, so.
Yeah. The new thing that you can specify here is an episode number. And if you specify an episode number and you mark your podcast show, the program level, as being serial based, mm-hmm. then the content will be displayed to the user in that order of the episodes that you provide. Now, let's make this more complicated. They have another tag called Seasons. Mm-hmm. If you decide you want to have a season 2, then you can start using the number 2 for your season field, and then immediately you can restart your episode number at 1 for this next season.
I'm going to appreciate that as a podcast listener.
Right. But that complicates things tremendously, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. because now you have to think of, all right, what episode number am I in this season?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So where podcasters up to this point, they've just been keeping episode numbers since the beginning. So, which actually, we'll touch on that, what we recommend here when we're done talking about the tags. Mm-hmm. So then the next one is the episode type. Now, this is not as tied to the serial versus episodic types, but it's just as useful. Mm-hmm. Podcasters can now set a trailer episode or a bonus episode. And I have yet to see how that's going to work or function in the app itself. Based on what I see in apps like TiVo, and other kind of apps for video, they're basically copying that same kind of navigation where they'll put the bonus content in its own area, and they'll put the trailers at the top. So that's the first thing that you could consume if your podcast is a serial-based podcast.
That's cool.
Yeah. So hopefully it's as cool as I'm picturing in my TiVo, because I can check out, find out right away watching a trailer if I want to subscribe or not to something.
Yeah, actually a trailer would be really nice to try out a podcast, because a lot of the time you don't know if you're going to like one until you finish the whole episode. So.
Right, right. And bonus falls right into the serial-based content too. I mean, imagine if you were doing a comedy podcast, like the folks here in Columbus that came to our last meetup.
Yeah.
What if you had a bonus of the mistakes?
The bloopers, really. Yeah.
I mean, that'd be sweet.
That would be.
So this stuff's pretty cool to me, but that's a good segue now into what our advice is.
Right.
So most podcasters are not creating serial or story or educational type content. They're creating more news or up to the current moment type podcasts. Mm-hmm. Or even some of that even is cross, right? So podcast consultants, for example, even though they're creating content that's educational, I would still say that it's episodic. Mm-hmm. Because if their episode they create today about these new tags, you couldn't refer to that from 6 months ago. And you certainly don't want someone to consume your podcast about podcasting from 6 years ago. Yes. Because it'll be completely irrelevant to today.
Yes, it would be.
So you have to really kind of think a minute and think about your show. And I think for most podcasters, these tags are not helpful. Mm-hmm. But, and this is where I'm kind of excited, once the light bulb goes off of how these work and how it can be used, I think a lot of podcasters are going to create new shows. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a whole new type of podcaster that want to create more art-based podcasting or educational-based podcasting than there are now, which is more news and fact and technology kind of related podcasts.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll bring out a whole new breed of creativity for the shows out there.
Oh, yeah. So, well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. There are a couple more tags, but they're not new. And actually, well, one is called the iTunes title tag. Mm-hmm. What Apple has done is they've gotten frustrated, probably because of us, with the titles also having other meta information, like the episode number. We've always advocated that you put the episode number and then the title of your episode in your titles.
Yeah.
And what they're looking for is just a clean title. And again, this goes back to the fact that now they're getting the episode number as a separate tag. They're able to display all this information in an organized way that they don't want that information now in the title.
Right.
So what this will mean for search, we're still waiting for a response from the Apple staff. But this is advantageous if you're creating content, again, that's serial-based. Mm-hmm. In that you can set specific titles without putting episode numbers, without putting extra hyphens or special guest names in there. It's just going to be a very clean title. Mm-hmm. That way, when people see it on their device, they know exactly what episode is because it's a different tag, and they'll know if they want to consume it or not.
Okay.
So there's two other tags that Apple's elaborated on. Actually, three. They're not new, but... And some of this we already knew in the past, but essentially, and sorry for most that are finding this too technical, but there are three tags in your podcast feed that make everything work. The first one is the GUID tag. So Apple's finally gone into more detail in their documentation on what that needs to look like. Mm-hmm. So for us developers, that's great. Basically, what they've added, there's nothing new that we need to worry about with PowerPress, which is great.
Yeah.
So you're good to, if you've been using PowerPress since 2008, you have nothing to worry about. And then the other two fields are the iTunes summary, which some people are going to be upset when they hear about this news. iTunes no longer wants to see HTML markup in there. So I know folks like Daniel Lewis from Audacity to Podcast and a few other podcast consultants, they love to put HTML, especially links and lists in these in the iTunes summary.
Yeah.
But for now on, when iOS 11 comes out, they no longer want that to have HTML in it.
Is there a reason why?
Probably because they're now officially supporting the content encoded tag.
Okay.
So that's the last tag we'll talk about.
Okay.
So if you're using PowerPress and actually WordPress, by default, the HTML that's entered into your blog post is also put in your content encoded. And iTunes now is officially documented that they will support the paragraph tags, the links, so ordered and unordered lists, and also href or web links. And we knew this before because we would see this for the past couple of years in the iOS app in the past that this was happening. Mm-hmm. But I remember contacting them, asking them, why is this happening? Why aren't you using the iTunes summary? And they never had an answer. So now it's official. They're using the content encoded. And the great news is if you're using PowerPress since 2008, mm-hmm. we've been doing that from the beginning anyway.
Okay, good.
So you're good to go.
So what else is going on with PowerPress? When can people expect these tags, I guess?
Well, we're going to release a new update. It's going to be 7.1. And the options are going to be available in, for the episode options, you have to go to the PowerPress settings and then episodes tab.
Okay.
And they'll be highlighted with a new tag in red next to each field. And then the switch between episodic to serial-based option will be under the iTunes tab.
Okay.
And then also, I was kind of curious too, because I didn't hear that. I'll be hearing it next week, mm-hmm. the conversation about the stats.
Mm-hmm.
What was the excitement about the stats now on iTunes?
Well, I think some of the excitement in terms of companies is that they think this will be helpful for monetizing.
Right.
And that they're going to be able to use the Apple stats as kind of a guide for everyone, because now everyone's kind of picking and choosing between different companies of who they'll trust. And Apple is definitely the end all be all of, you know, who an advertising company is going to trust. So I think that'll stand out for a lot of people.
Right. So I'm finding through the one Slack channel I'm a member of that it's unclear if Apple's going to provide all metrics or only metrics to listeners who opt in to be tracked.
Well, see, I was wondering about that too, because one, I don't really know where you're opting in for this. With it probably has to do with the iOS update. It's probably the terms of service there.
Oh, yeah. Because every time I get an update, they ask me if I want another thing tracked, and I'm always no, no, no.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence of that.
Yeah. So what I'm concerned about is this sounds great, but
how many people are actually going to do it?
Right. How many are going to participate and be okay with their personal track, their information being tracked?
Yep.
And I'm so used to saying no on these things that
I am too.
Yeah. That I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And actually, Windows 10 just the other day had the same kind of questionnaire about their version coming out in a couple weeks or months. And I'm like, no on everything.
Don't give them information about what is happening, about if it crashes or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm being optimistic. If they can get 10 or more percent of the market of users that are using iTunes to actually opt in, then there might be enough metrics there to be able to stipulate what the total numbers are.
I mean, I feel like there's at least enough people that, one, just don't care, or two, don't even realize. I mean, they're not reading. And how are they supposed to know that they're letting people track this unless they actually read it? So there's going to be that coming in as well.
And usually companies, when they display it, they word it in a way that it helps
mm-hmm.
Apple or it helps Microsoft.
Yeah.
And people want to help Apple and Microsoft.
They want to help their brand.
So, and so sometimes they do opt in. So hopefully, I don't know, we'll see.
I don't think there's any real date for this either, just the fall.
Yeah. And what would be great too is if they offer an API. But I know Google Play said they were going to have an API about a year and a half ago, and they still haven't released one. And the unfortunate thing is, from what I understand, most people aren't getting enough data out of Google Play to make it worth logging in to even look at it after a couple times.
Actually, I can't tell you the last time I checked, so maybe I should.
Yeah. Yeah, check and get back to me. Let me know if there's data in there.
Yeah, I will.
So,
okay. Well, thank you for the wrap up on the Apple Podcast new RSS tags, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.